One of the big challenges of the past couple of years is that outlooks have been constantly changing. We haven't really known what to expect next in our world. Certainly as it relates to the pandemic, it's been demonstrated that some have known better than others what the progression of COVID-19 would look like. But that's only one part of our much bigger picture. And it's been demonstrated that some have known better than others what the mental health toll of the past couple of years would be. But again, that's only part of our picture. The fact is that none of us have a full or guaranteed picture of what is to come. I would love to tell you what the future looks like. You know, it's comforting to know what's ahead. At least I would like to tell you what the future of our Covenant Christian community would look like. Well, we're going to talk about that today on Covenant Weekly Podcast, Episode 18, The Plans I Have for You. There's a verse in Jeremiah 29:11 that a lot of Christians throw around. It's the words of God spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope." This verse is regularly used to assure individual believers or church congregations that everything will work out wonderfully for us. Did you lose your job? That's okay, because God has good plans for you. Are you struggling with a disease? You can rest easy, because God has a future and a hope for you. Is a relationship struggling? God will take care of you. Are you struggling with your congregation with division? Well, God has good plans for you. Whatever is going wrong for you now, you don't need to worry about it, because God has planned something good that is ahead for you. There's two challenges to using this passage in this way. One challenge is that most of us understand things working out well for us to mean that our pain is healed, our struggle is over, our worries are resolved, our relationships are restored. We hold on to this with an expectation of how God will work out his good plans for us. So when things don't resolve, when the pain continues, when diseases progress, when financial struggles continue, when things to worry about grow, we easily begin to question God. After all, didn't he give us a promise that now doesn't seem to be coming true? And that leads us to the second challenge in using the passage this way. Simply put, using the passage in that way is using the passage to say something it wasn't saying originally and was never intended to say. God didn't make this promise the way we use it. The context of the passage is that Israel has gone down some terrible roads. They have created systems and structures that oppress the poor, reward the wealthy, practice religion for the sake of tradition, and ignore the heart of God. The powerful fight to consolidate even more power at the expense of the vulnerable who are cast aside, and instead of fixing it, people just try and gain power. For generations, God has warned them through the prophets about the way they are going. Still, they ignore God's plan for how he wants them to put his character on display in the world. In response, God removes his hand of protection from them and subjects them to the ways of the world they have embraced. If they want things to be about worldly power, let it be so. And so Jerusalem is attacked and conquered by Babylon, the large global power at the time. The leaders and artists and thinkers and culture makers of Jerusalem are taken as captives to Babylon, where we find them grieving and lamenting the loss of Jerusalem, the loss of the temple, and the loss of their way of living. In that context, Jeremiah comes with God's message. For the sake of saving time, I won't read it all for you, but I encourage you to read Jeremiah 29:4-23. There are a few things to note in this passage. The first is that it's not written to individuals. It's written to a community of people. To take this community-oriented message and apply it to individual circumstances is the first step in completely missing the point. Jeremiah then tells the community, hey, that you're going to be living in exile in Babylon, in their state of struggling for a pretty long time. Eventually, he tells them that this group, it's going to be exiled for 70 years before things even start to resolve. Most of the people in the audience he's writing to will not live to see things begin to change. This word of hope is about what God has planned for his people collectively, not to each person and not even to that specific group in that context. It's about his people as a whole. He then tells this community that together they need to work hard to live well in the situation they find themselves in. They need to do so in a way that isn't focused on just surviving, but that tries to do good for the community around them, even the community that has put them in this place of struggle. Rather than looking too far ahead, they need to live well in each moment. Jeremiah then warns them that there are going to be people who come and try to sell them something different. People who will come and try and tell them that if they just do A, B, or C, that everything will get better faster. Some will come and tell them that they can manipulate the circumstances to resolve their struggle, eliminate their worries, or alleviate their pain. But these messengers are not from God. Then Jeremiah gets focused back on the future hope they have. And even then, it's not a blanket statement that says everything will be okay. You know, this is where we read the statement in Jeremiah 29:11, promising that eventually they'll return to their home in Israel. But in the very next verse, after he says, I plan to give you future and a hope, he says, in those days, when you pray, I will listen. If you look for me wholeheartedly, you will find me. I will be found by you. Their hope, their return home, is tied to pursuing and drawing close to God. And let's not imagine that the return home is going to be a return to the way things were, a return to the comfort they once knew, a return to quote-unquote normal. The way things were wasn't good. That's why they're in this situation. When the community returns home, it's going to be a struggle to figure out a new life and a new way to be the people of God. If you read the stories of Israel's return to Jerusalem, that happens, it actually begins 7 decades later, you find that there's opposition from all sides. There's a tendency to do things in unhealthy ways. There's conflict among people who are rebuilding about how to do it in ways that honor God well. There is lament from people who remember what it was like before. Even the hope they are looking forward to will be filled with challenges and struggle. Nothing about this verse says that things will be easy or comfortable. And then in the end, Jeremiah shares God's word of assurance that God will deal with those who've caused this pain. I believe this is here to help the people struggling with how they're being treated by giving them a hope that frees them from the need to pursue vengeance. They can trust God with those who've contributed to their struggle and follow what he's already told them to do by trying to live for the good of those around them. Well, we use this passage to predict some type of wonderful future for individuals or groups of individuals. It's actually written for quite the opposite purpose. It's written to paint a bigger picture that encourages present action rooted in the knowledge that, hey, this plan God is working out, it's bigger than you, and it's further out in time than you wish it was. I wish I could have the assurance of what things will look like for us as a covenant family a year from now, or 2 years from now, or 10 years from now. I wish I could look at our reality in the world, you know, the pandemic and its implications, the ongoing financial challenges, our epidemic of mental health challenges, and the fragmentation of our society and our churches. I wish I could look at all of that and be certain that wonderful light is on the horizon. But that isn't the way the Bible speaks about the human experience, individually or collectively. Even the resurrection of Jesus, which changes everything, pointed way out to a future hope and calls on us to live in light of that future hope within the ongoing struggle and challenges of life. As I reflect on this passage and the plans I have for you that God speaks of to Israel, there are some beautiful implications for us today, even if it doesn't promise that all will be well 1 or 2 or 10 years from now. I think these are the plans God has for us at the moment in light of the plans he has for us as his people long term. The first plan is that we would hope. Hold on to the fact that we are participating in God's long-term rescue plan, not only for us or his church, but for the whole world. God does have a plan for the hope and future of his people. He's been working out that plan for millennia. So let's not presume that everything is going to be all wrapped up in our lifetime. And let's not presume on the other side that the mess of today can derail God's plan. It's continued through many messes before us and will likely continue to work itself out long after we're gone. Our first plan, our way to participate in God's plan, is to hope. Second thing I think God has for us today is to pray. And I don't mean that we just ask God for stuff. Prayer, at its essence, is drawing close to God. It's a relational connection with the divine. It is asking, it is receiving, it is longing, it is hearing, it is presence, it is pursuit. As we hope, we do so with the gift of God's Spirit in us and among us to help us keep walking our part of the journey as God's people today. This goes along with the fact that Israel needed to draw close to God to lean into his future for them. Third part of the plan is simply to love. While we wait and walk towards that future hope, we are called to love well in the time and place in which we live. There's an expression that some people are so heavenly minded that they're of no earthly good. May that not be true of us. Knowing the hope that we have and being connected to God through prayer is meant to flow out of us in love as we pursue the peace, the shalom, the healing of our world in the present. I'd like for us to know where we'll be 1 year or 2 years or 10 years from now as a church, but we don't need to know any of that to love well in the present. The plans God has for us are aimed towards the future, but lived out right now through how well we show love. And there's one word that I think is a part of what God has for us as we hope and pray and love. One more word, and that is struggle. The way of Jesus, the way of love and peace and service and humility and sacrifice, has always been a struggle to live out. That's why so much of church history doesn't look like Jesus. It looks like the pursuit of power and control and dominance because our tendency is to take the easy way. But those things are not the way of Jesus. I've been thinking about this a fair bit recently. It seems to me that if our faith involves pursuing power instead of laying it down, our faith is likely in something other than Jesus. If our faith involves protecting our stock portfolio instead of protecting the poor and the vulnerable, our faith is likely in something other than Jesus. If our faith involves grabbing after our personal rights and freedoms instead of kneeling to wash each other's feet, our faith is likely in something other than Jesus. If our faith is focused on preserving our lifestyle or our congregations or our life generally instead of dying daily and taking up one's cross to follow Jesus, our faith is likely in something other than Jesus. The way of hope and prayer and love is and always has been a struggle. This is why remembering that this is about community, it's about us and not about me, is so important. We need each other to hold each other up, cheer each other on, and keep each other on track on this journey. The fact that this is a struggle doesn't mean it's not good. Jesus, in fact, said that he is inviting us into life to the full. This life of hope and connection to God and love is both the hardest way to live and the most beautiful way to live. It is the Jesus way. Paul, in fact, says that it's in our places of struggle where God's power is most visibly seen. We are trusting in that as we pursue the plan he has for you, for us, that we can participate in right now. So, I can't tell you where Covenant is going to be 1 year or 2 years or 10 years from now, but I can tell you that we are hoping, we are praying, and we are seeking to love, even though it will be a struggle. And here are some of the next places of hope and prayer and love and struggle. And we have our Inspire Makerspace Camp coming up July 11th to 14th. This is an opportunity to love the kids and families in our community by providing them a space where they can be loved, where they can hear about the love of God and his heart for them, where they can learn some skills, and where they can have some fun. You know, this is going to be a struggle because we need God to provide materials and funds and people to make this happen. Every year, inevitably, there are challenges that we don't foresee, and some of the kids are struggles to work with. But we're saying yes to this opportunity and trusting in God to come through. Another area of hope and prayer and love and struggle is in sponsoring refugees. We've received word that Muna and Maynar, Iman's mom and sister, have been approved to come to Canada as refugees. This is a powerful opportunity for us to welcome the vulnerable stranger so that they can find peace and safety among us. And we're going to need people involved. We're going to need to raise $40,000. That's a huge number, and it will definitely require God to work among us in order to provide it. There are other areas of struggle we have as a church community, but I'm going to leave it with highlighting those two areas, those two opportunities for us to lean into the plans God has for us right now. These are the ways that we're trying to live out our long-term hope in connection with Jesus through loving well. And I'm glad to be in this struggle along with you. The only things I'm going to remind you of today are related to those things I just mentioned. If you'd like to register a child for Inspire Makerspace Camp, it's open to kids age 5 to 10, basically those going into senior kindergarten up to grade 5. The registration link can be found on our website, covenantchurch.ca, under the event page. If you'd like to, if you'd be willing to volunteer for the Inspire Makerspace Camp, there's a volunteer registration form found on the same event page, complete with a variety of roles you can sign up for. If you have any questions about what it means to volunteer or about the roles, please reach out to Brent@covenantchurch.ca. Finally, if you would like to participate in planning for refugees to come to Penetang or in welcoming them, please reach out to me or Elise Robitaille. You can reach me at john@covenantchurch.ca. If you would like to contribute financially to ensure that we can support them for their first year, the best way to do that is by clicking Give on our website. And then on the online giving page, there's a full list of accounts you can designate funds to. One of them is Refugee Fund. And the money designated there helps to make sure that we will be able to welcome and support Muna and Maynar. At the heart of God's plan is the assurance that you and me, that we are a part of something God is doing that is much bigger than we could even see or imagine right now. I hope that this is an encouragement to you and that you are encouraged to love well in the time and place and spaces and struggles where God is present with you right now. God bless. May you enjoy His presence and peace throughout this week.